Republicans understand the difference between evidence and proof? And do they care? That's the question that we should have in mind as we talk about the forthcoming discussion that happened, forthcoming on the program that happened yesterday on the Fox News channel. You know, if you sort of put your finger to the wind, the general feeling, the general environment when it comes to the Hunter Biden and especially the Joe Biden alleged criminality story, impeachment, prosecution, lock them up, all of that stuff. It seems like a deflated balloon. It seems like a womp womp sort of situation, because after years of this supposed inquiry, informally and more recently, more formally, they still have no evidence of criminality by Joe Biden. Now, I know a lot of people say, David, that doesn't matter. They don't care about evidence of criminality. They're putting on a show at the tail of end of which, you know, the pot at the end of the proverbial rainbow is we are now ready to impeach President Joe Biden. But it really has been deflated when it comes to the facts. And one of the primary nodes of disinformation and humiliation, to be honest, has been Republican Congressman James Comer. How many times have we seen Jamie, as so many of his fellow Republicans call him, appear on some such program, often on Fox News, many times with Trump brown noser Maria Bartiromo, and be asked a simple question like, do you have any evidence? Do you have any evidence Biden committed a crime? If so, what crime? Do you have any evidence of specific policies that Biden changed in order to help whoever was paying him? And the answer is always some version of no. That's different in this particular clip. In this clip, you will hear James Comer say to Maria Bartiromo that he absolutely has evidence that Biden benefited from influence peddling, but then he won't actually cite any of it. Let's listen to it. Let's watch it. Then we will talk a little bit about the difference between evidence and proof and facts and these sorts of concepts, which have proven quite elusive for the modern right winger.
Together. So tell us right here, right now, do you feel you have evidence?
By the way, do you feel is funny? Do you feel, is there, do you feel a tingle down your leg that you have what you need? What about the facts, sir?
To tell us, to share with us that Joe Biden, President Biden, actually benefited from this influence peddling scheme that you're referring to.
Absolutely. Joe Biden got two payments. We've already disclosed that came from Jim Biden as a result of the influence peddling schemes. Now, the White House and the media try to claim those were loans. Okay, let's say they were loans. They weren't, but let's say they were. For the sake of argument, Jim Biden never could have paid that $250,000 back to Joe were it not for the influence peddling schemes, the one with AmeriCorps Health that netted $200,000 to Joe Biden and the one from China that netted $40,000 to Joe Biden. So Joe Biden benefited to the tune of $250,000. We've proved
together
that it's, you know, you have to hand it to them. They're completely morally bankrupt. They are substantively vapid. They offer nothing. But you have to hand it to them that when James Comer sort of wraps all of that together, it kind of sounds like a coherent narrative, yet it's nothing more than conjecture and hyperbole. The evidence he cites of Biden benefiting from influence peddling is that Jim Biden gave money to Joe Biden. Now, Comer goes on to say, if that was just a loan repayment, fine, but that's still a problem because it was money that Jim Biden repaid with money he made thanks to Biden's influence peddling. There's no evidence of any of that. So when he says we have evidence, all they have is a photograph of a check of Jim Biden giving Joe Biden money. That doesn't implicate China. It doesn't implicate bribery. It doesn't implicate influence peddling. It doesn't implicate Hunter Biden. It doesn't do any of those things. And then Comer comes in and says, well, and we know that those were monies that Jim Biden got through the help of Biden's influence. They don't have any evidence of that. And you really have to understand that actions, evidence, and proof are all very different things. You might consider that like evidence are pieces of a puzzle. First, you've got just like actions. Oh, I got a loan. I withdrew $2,500 from the bank. I sent a check. I had a meeting. Okay, those are actions. Some of those actions we might call evidence if they were relevant to a particular matter. Now, evidence, by the way, evidence can either prove or disprove or do neither with regard to a particular claim. So in this case, we say the claim is Biden made money personally by changing policy in order to be useful either to the companies that were paying him or paying Hunter or paying Jim Biden. That's like generically speaking what they're alleging. That's what they want to prove. When they say the evidence is Jim Biden gave Joe Biden money, that's not evidence one way or the other with regard to their claim that there's criminality, that there's bribery, that there's influence peddling or whatever the case may be. Just the fact that a thing happened isn't proof or disproof of the main allegation that you're making, and actions can be completely irrelevant. It's like, hey, we looked at his credit card statement. He buys ice cream all the time. Okay, that's a fact. It's certainly not proof, and I wouldn't even call it evidence related to the claims that are being made. So here's one more clip, and James Comer's totally shot out of a cannon. He says, as far as the impeachment investigation, that they're getting close to criminal referrals. It's like, dude, what on earth are you talking about?
But we're going to give Hunter Biden an opportunity. I'm not sure he won't show up, Maria. There have been two times where he showed up when he said he wasn't going to show up to have a publicity stunt with the mainstream media to attack me and say that we didn't want to have a transparent public hearing. Well, that's going to be this week. And I fully expect Hunter Biden to show up. If he does not show up, then it's not going to end well for the Bidens, because we have three witnesses that have already testified under oath to significantly different.
They've testified under an oath. That's interesting.
Stories as to what exactly the Biden influence peddling schemes were. This is very serious because we're at the point now of criminal referrals.
Yeah.
Criminal referrals, meaning you are going to refer these people for criminal action. How many criminal referrals are you expecting to make?
Well, there are going to be multiple criminal referrals. Look, we've spent a year.
These people are so pathetic. I mean, it's like, just keep talking, dude. OK, at some point, show us evidence that proves your claims. Then we'll take it seriously. And Maria Bartiromo continues to entertain this. Fox News continues to entertain it. If you want to talk about evidence, all the evidence points to there is nothing there. There's a growing list of prominent Republicans who are publicly saying, I am not supporting Donald Trump in November. This is being sort of waved off by many on the right and the left as not important. But I'm here to tell you today, this is actually extraordinarily important. We're going to look at a montage here put together by the Biden-Harris HQ Twitter account. You will see Mitt Romney, the Republican senator who we know has said he's not supporting Trump. You are going to see new video from this weekend of the failed former president Mike Pence, the one that Trump supporters wanted to kill. He says he is not endorsing Trump in 2024. This is not getting the attention it deserves, and it does deserve attention. And I'll tell you the multiple reasons why in a moment. First, let's take a look at this.
I will not be voting for former President Trump.
And it should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump this year.
I have known him well for 22 years. More than anybody else in this race has known him. And I can promise you this, if you put him back behind the desk in the Oval Office and a choice comes and a decision is needed to be made as to whether he puts himself first or he puts you first, how much more evidence do you need that he will pick himself?
I don't intend to support him for the Republican nomination.
Who do you hope to support?
I haven't decided yet. It won't be him.
And what was the reason for you not supporting him?
Where do I begin? Thank you.
I can tell you that in the state of Michigan, he is now being hurt and trails Biden because of the fact that the evangelical community is saying, we don't think this is our guy. I don't know whether he can shore that up again. I don't know if this has been said on the air before, but the information that I have from a very well-respected pollster is The evangelical voters are saying, some of them are saying, enough is enough. It'll be interesting to see where this develops, because without them, he's got a real problem.
All right. So a couple different things here. I know a lot of people just kind of roll their eyes at this. Republicans roll their eyes and they say, why do we care if rhinos, Republicans in name only, why do we care if the rhino group of Republicans won't support Trump? They're just upset that Trump didn't give them cushy positions, or they have personal grievances or whatever. And then there's people on the left who will say, well, this doesn't really make a difference one way or the other. Great. Republicans who will never vote for Democrats anyway aren't going to support Donald Trump. Well, I take issue with that second assertion. I think some of these Republicans absolutely would consider voting Biden. And we've heard that there are moderate Republicans, we're going to hear from another one later today, who say, it's not that I agree with Biden on policy. I'm to his right. But I agree with Biden's decency and the fact that he is not the most important figure. It is the country and it is the voters, et cetera. So a couple different things. Number one, you don't usually forget about a former vice president not endorsing the guy they served under. That's absolutely a blockbuster in terms of Pence saying, yeah, I served under him for 4 years. I'm not endorsing him. I don't think he should be the president. That is noteworthy. And it goes to the discontent that there is in the Republican Party against Trump. Now, you might say, well, David, there's obviously not enough discontent to defeat him. And that's exactly my point. Trump securing between 60 and 65% of the primary vote, Nikki Haley, the lion's share of the remaining 35 to 40%. That is obviously not a majority, what the non-Trump vote secured, but it is huge, particularly when it is a former president from that party. So when you look at the Republican Party, Trump still has the lion's share of support, but those who don't support him from the party really don't support him. And this includes his own former vice president. This includes Republican senators, members of Congress and others. In terms of the strategy for the left, we want the biggest tent possible. Do I care if a bunch of these Republicans look at Trump and they say, this guy doesn't care about democracy. He doesn't care about the middle class person. He doesn't care about maintaining alliances and sticking to our word. Fine, I agree with him on abortion. But overall, I need someone who defends democracy, so I'm leaning towards Biden. Do we say, well, you're wrong about abortion, so we don't want your support? No, we say, hey, this broader goal of maintaining democracy is important, and you're welcome to join us in voting for Joe Biden and preventing Trump from becoming the president. And then, okay, so then on abortion, we're not going to agree. Once we get another 4 years of Biden, and then we can have the fight on abortion. As an ethical matter, also, we've talked about the deprogramming of cult members. And one of the critical elements of it is you want to provide a welcoming enough environment so they feel comfortable saying, hey, you know what? I was duped. I was wrong. I'm changing my mind. And one of the most important preconditions to deprogramming cult members is making them feel as though there are people they can go to and say, I might have been wrong, and they're not going to be judged or attacked. And instead, they're going to be told, it's an amazing thing that you've actually realized that. Tell me more. What made you realize that Trump was no good? How did this happen? And the third part is, to some degree, prominent defections can actually sway votes. There are constituencies where, you know, Utah, there's still Republicans in Massachusetts. Massachusetts will go to Biden, but there are Republicans in Massachusetts and surrounding states who saw Romney as a sensible guy. And so there are probably some Republicans in New Hampshire who will see Romney say, I'm not voting Trump. And they'll go, you know what? I always trusted Mitt Romney. I think I'm not voting Trump either. Or there will be some evangelicals in Indiana and maybe some in Ohio or maybe some in Michigan, nearby states, who will see Pence say, I'm not endorsing this guy. And some of them will say, you know, I always trusted Pence. I'm not going to write him off as a rhino. I'm actually going to listen to him and say, maybe I shouldn't vote for Trump either. So defections can sway public opinion. So my view is, welcome all of them. Come on in. Let's see if we can defeat this guy Trump in November. Breaking a deeply ingrained habit is one of the toughest things to do. Our sponsor, Fume, can make it easier. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong. So instead of a drastic, uncomfortable change, remove the bad from the habit. And that's, quite frankly, what Fume helps you do. Fume is an innovative, award-winning device that delivers flavored air. That's it. There's no vapor. There's no nicotine, no electronics. It's just delicious flavored air delivered by the cylindrical Fume device that fits in the palm of your hand. It comes in tasty, refillable flavors like raspberry lemon, orange vanilla, grapefruit, crisp mint. The Fume device goes in your pocket. You can carry it around. It has movable parts and magnets. So if you're fidgeting or want to, it's great for that. And it's just a useful thing to break bad habits. And it provides that perfectly satisfying hand-to-mouth mechanic that many people love. Don't judge Fume until you've tried it. They have helped countless people make positive changes, and you could be next. Head over to tryfume.com and use code PACMAN to save 10% when you get the Journey Pack, which comes with the device and several flavors to try. That's tryfume.com/PACMAN. Use the code PACMAN for 10% off the Journey Pack. The info is in the podcast notes. One of our sponsors today is BetterHelp. Viewers of the show, listeners know I'm a big advocate of therapy. I think it's important to make it more accessible, remove any stigma that might be associated. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. And therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp is therapy done entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. I'm a huge believer in talk therapy, and BetterHelp is making it more accessible to more people. You can even find a therapist who specializes in certain areas, which maybe you can't find where you are geographically. There are lots of great benefits to doing therapy online. Get it off your chest. Visit BetterHelp. Go to betterhelp.com/PACMANshow today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/PACMANshow. The link is in the podcast notes. We all know that person who loves taking photos, but they have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands, in the case of some folks I know, of pictures just wasting away on their phone. You can put them to good use with a unique, stylish digital picture frame from Aura Frames. I got these Aura Frames for my parents and preloaded them with pictures of the baby, and my parents love it. And I can add more pictures from wherever I am, and they pop up on their frames. It's so easy to see why Aura has been named the number one digital picture frame by Wired and by the New York Times. My favorite part is you can use a QR code on the outside of the box to load it with pictures, so you can still hand off the gift brand new in the box, but it's already preloaded with the pictures. Then you and the recipient can add pictures via the app. No cables or USB. It's all over Wi-Fi, super convenient. And it comes with unlimited storage. Load as many pictures as you want. For a limited time, my audience gets $20 off their best-selling frame. Go to AuraFrames.com and use code PACMAN. That's A-U-R-A, frames.com. Promo code PACMAN to get $20 off Aura's best-selling frame. The info is in the podcast notes. Terms and conditions apply. We're supposed to believe that every time Donald Trump glitches and short circuits, it's on purpose, it's satire, it's comedy. But the latest one is really tough to watch and really tough to believe. This one's actually scary. We're going to look extensively at a rally Trump did in Dayton, Ohio over the weekend, but I really want to isolate this one moment. Donald Trump said that Joe Biden defeated Barack Obama. Donald Trump said that Joe Biden ran against and beat, won against Barack Obama. This never happened. This is the type of true problem in the brain that Dr. John Gartner told us about the other day. And the crowd starts to get confused. What the hell is Trump talking about?
Say it against Biden, in the largest margins ever. You know what was interesting? Joe Biden won against Barack Hussein Obama. Has anyone ever heard of him? Barack Hussein Obama.
What is he talking about? Biden won against Obama? This is not a guy who is well, and this is very clear here. This isn't a stutter. This isn't Trump reading the wrong facts that someone put on the teleprompter for him. This is Trump visibly confused and disoriented about simple historical facts and realities. When we talk about the phonemic paraphasia that Dr. John Gartner told us about, when we talked about those mismatches and the glitches, my hair goes crazy when I do it, but when Trump gets the wrong word and his shoulder goes up and he almost seems to clench up in a very strange way. This is not, you know, Biden stuttered. This is a different thing and it needs to be taken seriously. Now, as I've said before, if Trump was 40, not obese, cognitively fine, I still would not vote for the guy because of his authoritarian wannabe dictator mentality, because he's dishonest, because he cares only about himself. He's an egomaniacal narcissist because he puts people around him who are dangerous. But in addition to all of this, for those focused only on the ages of the candidates, something's very wrong with this guy. Very, very wrong. And we are starting to see, by the way, as Dr. John Gartner predicted, it's accelerating. It's not just, you know, a single word here or there. Nikki Haley, in terms of Nancy Pelosi, was scary enough. He really didn't know who he was talking about or what was going on. But I want you to really go back and look at the clip. Is there anything there that seems like Trump is telling a joke? Because that's what he has told us. When he does this stuff, he says he's telling a joke. Listen to it again.
Ever. You know what was interesting? Joe Biden won against Barack Hussein Obama. Has anyone ever heard of him?
What's the joke? What's the satire? What's the parody? What is he talking about? Why is that a joke? What would be funny about that? So the I'm doing it on purpose thing doesn't make any sense. In this campaign, Trump numerous times has said that he's running against Barack Obama, and now he's saying it's Biden who defeated Barack Obama.
Obama.
Exactly. You be the judge. If you think this is nothing, I want to hear from you. What's going on? All right, let's get to the bloodbath scenario. Failed former President Donald Trump at this very same rally in Dayton, Ohio, threatening a bloodbath if he loses. Now, Trump was a little careful. He sort of framed it as it'll be a bloodbath for the auto industry. And that's the plausible deniability that his strongest and most sycophantic defenders are using to say this is no big deal. But of course, we know Trump's history. We know Trump's inciting of a riot. We know Trump trying to steal the election. We know Trump's other threats. So the context in which Trump says this is a context in which he is known for inciting violence, and his followers know we should be paying attention because he might deputize us to violence once again. Here's Trump.
And you're not going to be able to sell those guys if I get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories of.
Right. I mean, it's going to be a bloodbath if I don't get elected for General Motors. They're going to have trouble selling cars. Now, for everybody defending this and saying, oh, it's out of context, why is everybody assuming Trump is talking about violence? My guess is, if you interviewed the MAGA cultists exiting the rally and said, what do you think Trump meant when he said there will be a bloodbath if I lose? What percentage do you think would know that that was only referring to the auto industry and the difficulty in selling inventory that they will be accumulating? Trump knows what he's doing. He knows how he is heard. And that's why these excuses of no, 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 there's nothing at all violent there. He's just referring only to the auto industry. You'd have to be extraordinarily naive or completely disconnected from the last 4 years to understand or to believe or to fall for that. Now, there were no shortage of other problems for Donald Trump during this bizarre event. Trump botching the word bite. Again, just really struggling to get through these speeches.
I saved you, cried the woman. I saved you. I saved you. And you've bitten me, but why? You know your boit is poisonous.
Your boit is poisonous. And then lastly, no Trump rally is complete without virulent xenophobia, reminiscent of past regimes that have dehumanized whoever. Here is Trump talking about, you know, some of these immigrants, they really are animals.
Right? Young people, they're in jail for years. If you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion, but I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. They say you have to vote against him because did you hear what he said about humanity? I've seen the humanity and these humanity, these are bad. These are animals, okay? And we have to stop it. We can't have another Lakin. We have so many people. We have so many people being hurt so badly and being killed. They're sending their prisoners to see us. They're sending and they're bringing them right to the border. And they're dropping them off and we're allowing them to come in. And these are tougher than anybody we've got in the country. These are hard.
All right. This, you know, we've talked about it before. This is the absolute worst, bottom of the barrel, dehumanizing language. Not people, but animals. And of course, if you see someone as an animal, then you are going to be more willing to accept them being treated like animals. For example, being caged. And that is what this is fundamentally about. Trump has told us he will militarize deportations. He will put migrants in camps. He has said all of what he would do. And at a certain point, we just have to say, yeah, that's what he's going to try to do. We can't leave it to whoever in the military to prevent it. We have to prevent it ourselves by how we vote in November. The Trump rally cult went off the rails at the Dayton, Ohio rally, playing the treason national anthem and actually rising in honor of what they call the January 6th hostages. We call them alleged criminals. We call them criminal defendants. This is the new big hot thing in MAGA world, which is they now treat the hundreds or nearly 1,000 at this point individuals who were arrested and charged for their role in the January 6th riots more than 3 years ago. They are now calling them hostages. They are saying they have been so unfairly treated. Normally tough on crime, normally tough on crime Republicans are saying we need to free the hostages. And now they have a, I'm calling it a treason national anthem. This was at the start of Trump's rally in Dayton, Ohio. Look at this. And if you're eating, by the way, I might pause or put down the food because this is pretty vomitous.
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
By the way, I don't know who Trump is saluting. I mean, I don't pretend to be an expert in matters of military elements, but if there is saluting, shouldn't either the person doing the saluting or the person being saluted have military service in their background? And we know Trump got out of the military because of his ankles. He got a very strong letter on the heels or whatever. And I don't think most of the January 6th alleged criminals were members of the military at any time. So who is Trump saluting? What is going on?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
It's the treason national anthem. Utterly unhinged, utterly unhinged. And then Trump at the start of the rally also using this term hostages, where I'm starting to wonder if they don't know what the term hostages really means.
Well, thank you very much. And you see the spirit from the hostages, and that's what they are, as hostages. They've been treated terribly and very unfairly, and you know that, and everybody knows that.
Right.
And we're going to be working on that sooner. The first day we get into office, we're going to save our country, and we're going to work with the people to treat those unbelievable patriots, and they were unbelievable patriots and are.
Law and order. They must have gotten arrested for a reason. They wouldn't have been charged, right? Unless they did something wrong. These were the stories we would hear. We have to defer to law enforcement because we back the blue and blah, 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 right? Oh, hold on a second. The police are bad now if it's Capitol Police. The police are bad now if it's federal law enforcement. Defund the FBI, defund all these agencies. And we're giving the benefit of the doubt to every alleged criminal here. Oh, we care about pretrial detention conditions all of a sudden. We've got to make sure that the alleged rioters get their vegan food in jail. Remember that whole thing with Marjorie Taylor Greene? No, these are not serious people. And this is borderline treasonous. Certainly not law and order. When they say law and order, show them the treason national anthem and Trump saying we got to help out all these people who are being treated so unfairly. It's law and order when convenient and very much the opposite when it's not. One of today's sponsors is Strideline, the creator of the most comfortable sock on earth. Established in 2009 by childhood friends in Seattle, Strideline has dedicated years to researching the most comfortable socks, and they really are. They present you with socks that are not only incredibly comfortable, but highly functional for an unparalleled experience. For the sports enthusiasts in the audience, Strideline will keep your feet warm on game day as an official partner of the NFL, MLB, NCAA, and Major League Soccer. They bring you a range of socks tailored for every sports fan. But Strideline's diverse collection also includes non-sports socks like basic crew and ankle socks, as well as premium options like combed cotton and merino wool. Embracing sustainability, their eco socks are made from recycled plastic bottles that are taken out of the ocean. You can make your feet and the earth more comfortable. I grabbed a pair of fantastic New England Patriots socks, even though it's not going so well for the Pats right now. They are still my go-to when I'm watching the games. Go explore their extensive sock collection. Enhance your comfort with an exclusive 15% discount using the code David at Strideline.com. That's STRIDELINE.com. Use code David at checkout for 15% off. The info is in the podcast notes. It's great to welcome to the program today host of the Don Lemon Show, Don Lemon, who we were recently talking about because there's a lot going on. Don, this is so timely, and I'm so glad to have the opportunity to talk to you about it.
I'm so glad to be on your program. Thank you for doing this, David.
So to start with, the context here, the last 72, 96 hours, you're launching a new show. Launching the show with this extremely interesting interview with Elon Musk. And in just the hours after the filming of the interview, not even the release, it is revealed that the contract you had with X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, was being canceled by Elon Musk. Now, I may not be using the right terminology, and you'll tell us that. So let's start there. What was the plan in terms of what you were going to be doing with X and the circumstances of how you even sat down with Elon?
Your terminology is correct. Okay. Contract canceled. That's a quote from Elon Musk from a text that he sent to my representatives. So the terms of the contract were I was going to be doing a show on my own anyway, which is produced by my production company, LMN, which is Lemon Media Network. But we can call it LMN. Yep. So we were going to post on, you know, every streaming platform, including iHeartRadio, Spotify, YouTube, and what have you. X wanted a distribution deal on top of that, on top of the three episodes that we ran every week. I think they wanted 10 videos per month, which were exclusive to them, which had to be maybe 10 to 12 minutes. Exclusive to them for 24 hours. And then after that, it would run everywhere on all streaming platforms. So that was it. The show was not produced by X. They had nothing to do with it. They did not get to see it. All we were doing was giving them some extra exclusive content for 24 hours. And that was it. That was our relationship.
So, of course, you're free to post whatever you produce on X anyway. But the point is that that exclusive 24-hour embargoed content, that's the part that's been canceled because of the way the interview went. That's the only reason, as far as you understand.
Well, no, Dion, not just that part, but in the contract, there were incentives for growth on the platform. There were incentives for, not incentives, there were promises of amplification of, you know, if I brought advertisers back to the platform, that there were incentives there because, as you know, they were struggling. A lot of advertisers left the platform because it had become, it was becoming so toxic and so right-wing conspiracy theorist. And so there were multiple incentives for different things. And yes, there was, you know, there was money on top of it, right? There was a financial incentive in there, financial incentives. So one would assume that all of that is canceled right now.
There was a rumor that it included a Cybertruck. Is that true?
That's all. Listen, that's all nonsense. I'm not going to let the distraction, clearly a distraction from X, to try to, you know, they're trying to distract from the interview. The interview is what's important. That's all nonsense. And I don't even want to, you know, feed into that because I think they're intentionally trying to distract from Elon Musk's performance or just the interviews to get people talking about something else.
Not exactly the most practical car in Manhattan anyway, I would say, but okay. So I understand that now, so that part is all canceled. Now, did anyone try to stop the publication of the interview itself in this interim few days?
I'm not sure what was happening behind the scenes. They did ask us, they were very concerned about the interview. And let me just preface and I'll answer your question. We told them this was not a gotcha interview. We don't understand why he's so upset. Was it uncomfortable at times? Absolutely. But many interviews are uncomfortable at times. That's what journalists do, right? We hold people accountable, and being held accountable is not always comfortable. So we went back and forth, and once we spoke to some of the, well, at least one person at X, they asked us to see the interview before it aired, which, as you know, is a big no-no. We do not do that.
Yep.
So I'm not sure behind the scenes if they were trying to, you know, stop the interview from running. I do know that we had some issues with the platform this morning that we had never had before when trying to post the interview, but it ended up posting. And listen, there are also questions about suppression on the platform that I think journalists should be digging into.
Were you asked before about what you were or weren't going to talk about, or given restrictions, asked for questions in advance, or any of the stuff that publicists sometimes do?
No. I know that publicists do that, and that may be okay in the entertainment world. I don't work in the entertainment world. So I will give people an idea of the questions, right? The topics that we're going to cover, that we would like to cover in the interview, but never questions. And no restrictions. And I say that in the beginning of the show. If you watch it, I say, as with all of my interviews, there were no restrictions. Nothing was off limits. And that's how I conduct interviews. So, you know, I let them know that. David, I let them know that before I joined the platform. I told them that I had questions about joining the platform, that I was reticent, that I really didn't want to do it. I turned them down several times. They kept pursuing me. And they kept sweetening the deal, offering incentives. And I said, okay, if I join this platform, number one, I want to do it because you have a huge audience. There are, I think, some 550 million users a week on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. So that's a huge audience. I also said, I don't think that that platform should be ceded to extremists and conspiracy theorists. So if I can get in there and I can fight it out and I can be authentic and I can get my point across, and I might even have to call out the person who owns the platform. And I said, if I can do that, then I'm okay. And they said, yes, you can do it. And I think he would actually welcome that. And I said, okay, great. Well, let's move ahead and try to work this out. And we did. And when I did exactly what they wanted me to do on the platform, they canceled the contract. Now, if I can go on and tell you something that I've noticed, because I've been in traditional media for a long time, right? Everyone's in silos. The streaming part of it, of this business, the streaming part is really dominated by conservatives. They do quite well, usually do better than people who are centrists or left-leaning. And so I just think that they are in such a silo. Elon Musk and others like him are in such a silo that they don't hear different points of view, and they don't like to be questioned about it. And when someone does question them, and when they are presented with facts, it's very uncomfortable, and they decide to take their toys and go home because they really can't deal with it. No one has ever told them the truth. They just keep hearing their own points of view, their own conspiracy theories from people who love them all the time.
And well, that's one aspect to it. I wonder if the other aspect is, though, that maybe Elon assumed that because you stand to benefit financially from the platform, you just wouldn't ask him real questions. Like, maybe that was because he comes off as unprepared to even, as I said, when I analyzed the interview, he could have had some very simple talking points to rebut your questions. We would all we would all react by saying he's not really answering it, but at least it would have passed the sniff test of this guy's coming off terribly unprepared, etc. I wonder if he just assumed no one would ever bite the hand that might feed them, for lack of a better term.
Well, two things. Elon Musk is running the company. Make no mistake about it. My deal, every aspect, every point of my deal went through Elon Musk. So there was no question in my mind, unless someone didn't inform him, about what I was going to do and how I was going to be on the platform. So if Elon Musk thought that he bought me or that I was going to pull punches because he, you know, was, you know, I had a deal with him and a distribution agreement, then he was quite wrong. The entire reason they wanted me to do this is for my point of view and to be who I am. So I don't know, but I think here's the interesting part. I think he came off better in the interview than he thinks. I think he actually had some good answers to questions, especially about his ketamine use, about depression. He, you know, I understood some of what he was saying about the platform and hate speech and what have you. And there's a lot of stuff on the platform and in mainstream media there, you know, you don't have so many people using it every day and you have 20, 30 stories. And that way you can sort of monitor them a little bit and monitor them more. I understood that, but if he thought that I was, you know, he bought and paid for me, he was quite wrong. And I think anyone who thinks that if they hire me or use my services in some way would be quite wrong. At the end of the day, David, I am a journalist, and that's what I do.
There were moments during the interview where he would mention that he's very short on time and that there's a room full of people waiting to hear from him and that this is sort of like a favor because you are going to be on X and it's all like not something he would normally do. What was this room? How much time were you told you had versus him insisting he's short on time? It felt manipulative as I looked at it.
You mean on his part that he was trying to manipulate me? Yes.
Yes.
So the only thing that they wanted, and they said there were no restrictions, they wanted at least an hour. And we said, well, that's great because we don't want sound bites. So that is one thing that they wanted, right? I could have gone 10 minutes, but they said they would like to have at least an hour. They didn't say an hour and it's up. They said at least an hour. And we were like, great, we'll go as long as we want because we want to have a great interview. We don't want just sound bites. So yes, I think towards the end, which wasn't, I thought we were just right in the middle, right? But it was the end for him. It started to get increasingly more uncomfortable because I kept presenting him with facts and he couldn't really, you know, answer for them about DEI, you know, as it relates to medical schools and, you know, the airline industry, et cetera, et cetera. And he just kept saying, well, let's wait until this airs and see what the comments will be on Twitter or on X. And I said to him, comments aren't facts. They're not evidence. And so that he didn't like that. He did not like being presented with facts.
Do you worry at all now that the interview's out, your channel is live, which we're linking to, you're doing a bunch of interviews about this. Do you have any concerns at all that they may try some kind of legal action with regards to the interview? And I ask that with the same perspective as you, that he comes off kind of like a prick, but not as terribly as maybe, like, as you're pointing out, some of his answers are fine. It's just his opinion about a number of issues. Like, it's not really that damaging based on what's known about the guy.
No. And I said to him, well, not to him, but to, you know, his management team, for someone who says he doesn't care what people say and think about him, he certainly does care what people think and say about him. Mm. I don't think he comes off that bad. I don't think he comes off terribly or unlike what we think Elon Musk is like in the interview.
Right.
I just think sitting there, David, and answering questions from someone like me who has a different perspective and a different worldview was just too much discomfort for him to deal with. And he did not, he's not used to answering questions at all. He's not used to being held accountable. And I just think that was it for him. And, you know, I think more of it was this, just the sitting in the interview and answering questions rather than the finished product. And we kept saying, why don't you wait till it airs? If you want to wait till it airs and you want to cancel the contract, that's fine. But you don't even know what it's going to look like. You don't even know what the final product is. And I defy anyone, including Elon Musk, to take a look at that entire interview and tell me why that isn't exactly what they need on that platform. And why isn't it what he said he wanted from me on the platform? I was not disrespectful. I did not raise my voice. I thought the questions were fair. I dug in as a journalist does, and it's uncomfortable for people. I followed up, and that's it. Have a great day. I'll see you next time.
I think my biggest takeaway from all of this, and I said this last week when we talked about it, is that, and I didn't say this as a criticism of you, a lot of the questions weren't really that hard, but by the standards that in many in the United States have become accustomed to, it's considered controversial or adversarial. Whereas like in my birth country of Argentina, if you watch interviews with lawmakers there or in Europe or other places, not doing what you did would be considered a disservice. Like what you did would be assumed that is what you're going to do. And when it goes too far, you could argue is if you get into personal stuff that's not germane to the subject of the interview, or if you lie about the premise of the interview and then sandbag with something else. Okay, maybe that's going too far. But in much of the world that has journalism, it would be expected that you ask the sorts of questions that you ask, and the standards that many have become accustomed to, I think, is the problem.
Yeah, well, when you said that, not being critical of me, I welcome it. You can criticize me. That's the whole point of it. Again, I'm a journalist. I have thick skin. We're supposed to talk about these things. If I watch something that you did, David, and I disagree with it, I would tell you, I would be respectful about it and say, David, on this point, I didn't agree with you. You know, did you ever think about it this way? And we would just have a dialogue.
Right.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Sure.
Right. So if you criticize me, that doesn't matter. I agree with you. That was intentional, that the questions weren't that complicated, because we wanted everyone to understand what we were doing. We wanted him to do the talking so that people could get to understand him. And it was actually supposed to be an interview, but more of a conversation that we were. So it was just simple questions. You know, why do you say DEI is, you know, are you saying that white male pilots are inherently more intelligent than women or pilots of color? It's like, wait, what? And then he couldn't understand why. He said, no, I just think it's that it would be a shame if we lowered the medical standards. And I said, well, but there's no evidence that that's happening. And by, you know, tweeting what you were tweeting and saying what you're saying, this is what you're insinuating, that people of color and women are less professional, less skilled, and less intelligent. That he could not understand that at all. So the questions were simple, intentionally letting him talk more than I did. That was intentional. And also keeping a moderated tone was intentional, because I didn't want to come off as if I was badgering him.
Right.
I'm just asking you questions. And the first interview, David, as you know, the first interview, especially with someone you're working with, or someone you know, the first interview can't be like, hey, let's sit around and talk like we're having beers. Like, we got to get some things off of our chest.
Yep.
Right? Why are you doing this? You're responsible. You're the owner of one of the biggest social media platforms, the biggest information platforms in the world. You have satellites flying in space. You're responsible for a huge portion of the auto industry, for innovation, for science, all kinds of things. Why are you putting this information out into the universe if it is not true. Don't you think that there should be a standard when it comes to what you put out there at the standards at X, that there should be some moderation of hate speech, of lying, of misinformation, of conspiracy theories? You don't think you have a responsibility for that? That's, we had to get that off of our chest before we can say, okay, now let's have a beer and chat like bros.
Right. Which I'm guessing didn't end up happening, by the way.
No, but I would have. Here's the point. I've interviewed, as you know, from presidents to convicts.
Yep.
From, you know, I would have a huge argument on the set with Corey Lewandowski, who ran Trump's campaign. And then after the show on CNN, we go and have a beer. I still didn't agree with him.
Right.
I thought what he was doing was terrible, but I wanted to have a relationship with him so that I could kind of figure out who he was. I wasn't friends with him. I didn't necessarily like him. I'm just using him as an example.
Sure.
But I would have gone with Elon Musk and had a beer and talked it out. But I had to do my job in the moment. And that, you know, that other thing, that's something else. The next time we talk, it may be more of a conversation. And maybe I would actually get more out of him. But that first interview or conversation could not be that.
We've been speaking with Don Lemon. We'll be linking to the Don Lemon Show YouTube channel, as well as the full interview with Elon Musk, which premiered this morning. Don, really appreciate your time and your insights. And I encourage people to check out the whole interview.
David, thank you. I watch your show religiously. And I have to say, you, the perspective that you have, the intelligence with which you bring forth the information, I think it is much needed. And I wish you great success. And I hope to come back on. If I can be half as successful as you in this streaming part of it, I'll be happy. So thank you.
Thank you. Staying healthy is often about what is a sustainable habit, one that works for you, something you'll stick to. I have a scoop of AG1 in the morning before my infamous cappuccino. Each serving of AG1 just gets me super simply the vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics that I'm looking for. It's just like a foundation for the entire day, and it's super easy. I fill up the shaker with super cold water. I put a scoop of AG1 in, shake, and I'm ready to go. If I'm running short on time, I'll just grab a travel pack, which has an individual serving of AG1 that you can easily mix on the go. So even if I'm away from home, I'm just getting that nutritional foundation. I don't have as much time as I would like to perfectly fine tune every single meal. I do the best I can, but I don't want to be dealing with 10 different vitamin supplement bottles, and AG1 just solves all of that. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2, plus 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/Pacman. That's drinkag1.com/Pacman for free vitamin D and K2 and 5 free travel packs of AG1. The link is in the podcast notes. We continue to hear from Republicans who are former supporters of President Trump, but aren't voting for him in 2024. I want to feature another one of these for you. This is Mike from Pennsylvania. And what's interesting to me about these, number one, we are, of course, considering these in the context of prominent Republicans like Mitt Romney, Mike Pence, and others who are not endorsing Donald Trump in 2024. We talked about that earlier in the show. And so the trickle down effect of that, the waterfall effect of that, is relevant and it's important. But beyond that, it's interesting to hear what it is that for any one former Trump voter made them say no more. Let's listen to the story from Mike from Pennsylvania and see what he had to say.
Donald Trump is mentally unfit for the office. My name is Mike. I live in southeastern Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, and I am a former Trump voter. Donald Trump scares the hell out of me. He does. He really scares me to death. There's a lot of reasons that I don't support Donald Trump, but what really turned me was in 2017, I remember him saying to this room full of billionaires, "I just saved you guys a ton of money." I was thinking, I thought to myself, he doesn't care about me. I hoped that Trump would have been more concerned about working people. He's not.
So that is what turned Mike from Pennsylvania. And what's reinforced to me in hearing this is that for every voter, there is something that can pull them in and there is something that can push them out. Now, for Trump voters, what can push them out may be unlikely to ever happen. And what I'll give you an example. Trump always likes to say, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any support. There are probably some Trump voters where it would take Trump murdering someone for them to say, okay, now it's too much. For Mike from Pennsylvania, it was the unabashed confirmation that Trump doesn't really care about the middle class. Trump cares about saving his rich friends' money, and that's what he bragged about doing. And of course, we can look at Mike and say, what a moron Mike is. We all knew that. We knew that from the beginning. Well, okay, but listen, Mike figured it out. And he's changed his mind and he's no longer going to vote for Donald Trump. So really, this is just another reminder. And I know we've talked about it. It's another reminder that one of the most important environmental sort of elements to getting people to change their views, to leave a cult, to vote for somebody different, is creating an environment where we welcome them when they figure out reality. And so while many people I know will say, well, Mike's a moron and he's probably against abortion, too. My reaction would be, hey, you know what, Mike? It's a fantastic thing that you figured that out. You're right. Trump doesn't care about the average middle class person. He doesn't care about you beyond what you might donate or if you might vote for him. He doesn't care about most of the people you know. It's a great thing that you're opting to vote for a candidate who actually does seem to care about those folks, you and the people that you're talking about. We should welcome it. We shouldn't shame them. Donald Trump gave an interview to Fox News and makes a threat so insane, even many MAGATs don't believe it. We know it because they've told us before they don't believe it when Trump makes the threat. Trump defended in an interview with Howard Kurtz on Fox News. Trump defended his call that you might have to terminate parts of the Constitution. This is what people, when Luke Beasley showed them the troth from Trump saying, hey, we might have to terminate parts of the Constitution. One guy said, oh, that must be doctored. Here's Trump saying it. He doesn't hide it.
I don't want to relitigate your accusations about the 2020 election, but a while back you wrote on Truth Social, a massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. That was pretty chilling for people who kind of sort of like the Constitution.
Well, no, all I'm saying is, an election has to be constitutional. I'm not saying void the Constitution or anything like that, but they're the ones that are violating the Constitution. I'm not violating. I'm saying when they cheat on an election, you may not be able to say this because you're at Fox, but some people do say it and many people agree with it.
Mostly Republicans. It's become a very partisan
thing. I guess so, but the Democrats believe it too, but they don't want to say it. I mean, they believe it too. You just have to look at the numbers, but without getting at that, look, we have to have free elections. They have to be fair. And people have to know that they're free. They have to know that they're fair. And you have to have borders. You have to have borders. You have to have great elections, free elections, fair elections, no cheating, no ballot drops, no anything. It has to be basic voter ideas.
So listen, in his own way, it's a mishmash, right? What's Trump saying? What Trump is saying is, I'm not talking about just going out and violating the Constitution for no reason. I'm saying when they stole the election from me, they violated the Constitution. And in those cases, tit for tat, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, when they violate the Constitution and steal the election from me, I get to violate the Constitution, I guess, to take it back. Not exactly inspiring confidence in Trump's commitment to the Constitution. And there it is, exactly what we suspected. Trump asked about the 16-week national abortion ban, which he previously said is it's completely fabricated that I want that. He seems to be saying he does want it. And then he repeats tired lies about abortion.
New York Times piece by Maggie Haberman and others says that you have discussed with your advisors.
Yeah.
Having a ban, the possibility of a ban on abortion after 16 weeks, plus the three exceptions that I know are important to you, yeah. Rape, incest, life of the mother.
Right, very
now,
important.
I don't know if it's possible to make both sides happy in this debate because people have such strong moral feelings,
yeah.
But does, you were quoted as saying to one of your aides, well, I like 16 weeks because it's a nice round number, 4 months. Do you think that could be politically acceptable?
So we're going to find out, and pretty soon I'm going to be making a decision. And I would like to see if we could do that at all. I would like to see if we could make both sides happy. Look, a lot of things were done with Roe by killing it. Number one, we brought
Which
it back to the States.
Of course, your justices to the Supreme Court have made that possible.
They did.
Yeah.
And you know, they did something that from a lot of standpoints is extremely good. Number one, the Democrats are the radicals on this issue because it's okay to have an abortion in 7, 8, 9 months and even after birth, according to that.
Well, I know that's
And
in
I will
dispute.
Say this.
I know that's in
If
dispute.
You speak about the subject right, you...
All right. So Trump telling the lie that there are post-birth abortions. Of course, there are not. And by definition, it's not an abortion. And I can't even get into that. I'm so sick and tired of it. But Trump seems to be confirming the reporting from Axios. Remember, Axios reported Trump and advisors are talking about a 16-week national abortion ban with three exceptions. The Trump campaign put out a statement saying it's fake news. But Trump is saying here, yeah, actually, it is something that we're looking at, and I'm going to make an announcement about it soon. Now, he may not do it, but he's certainly not saying that's not even under consideration. He's saying it is under consideration. So the report that Trump called fake news was accurate. Just a reminder for us that when there is a report and Trump gets up on stage and says it's fake news, he will sometimes later confirm that the report is correct. He might have forgotten about the report. He might have forgotten about the denial, but he then confirms that it is correct. Lastly, I'm going to play for you a confused rant from Trump about whether or not TikTok should be banned. Reports are someone with a stake in TikTok got to Trump and convince Trump to say, we don't want to ban it anymore.
Going
to
do it to TikTok, do it to Facebook. And what you can do is let them sell TikTok, let them sell it in the market, maybe get a good price, maybe not get a good price, I don't know. But take it away from China control. But I think China controls Facebook also, because they have tremendous power in that company. Going to do it to TikTok, do it.
So I guess what Trump is saying is whatever TikTok is doing, it's also happening on Facebook, so just deal with everybody the same, which, by the way, is more or less what AOC said in a much more coherent way, which is we should have guidelines if you want to operate a social media company in the US. Everybody should abide by them. TikTok's not exempt. Apply everything equally, which, by the way, is also my position. The issue, of course, is that Trump has trouble explaining this position. And also, it's a brand new position, which is believed to be connected to Trump getting a call from someone who really doesn't want TikTok banned in the United States. So there will be forthcoming discussion about it. Overall, Trump again saying, no, you could be justified in suspending the Constitution. You could be justified in not banning TikTok, and you could be justified, he could, in a national 16-week abortion ban. This is shaping up to be a very scary second term, which is why we need to prevent it from happening. No voicemail today because I'm out of time, but we've got a great bonus show for you, and I'll be back tomorrow.